Good evening, folks. This is Carolyn Evers. And as you know, it's one of my favorite times of the week where we could touch one another, share ideas, ask questions, and you might even say, look for the truth. And tonight I have one of my special friends with me that you all know and love because he is so dear.
Thank Richard. Hi, everyone. This is Richard.
Isn't that the voice of a dear one? So this is the last show he will be with us before he travels along. You know, he's one of those little freight trains in the sky. Doesn't stay at one place too long. He's like Mercury. He's got little wings on his feet. He's laughing because he knows it's true.
I don't know. The planet Mercury gets a bit warm for me.
What gets warm?
The planet Mercury.
Oh, okay. Got a lot of things to talk about. And as Richard and I talk about these things, if you want to call in response to what we have spoken about or ask a question, please do that while we're engrossed in what we're bringing forth. One of the things that I wanted to talk to Richard about was what we perceive as truth and truth. To give an example of what I mean by that, we just recently had an election, and both parties heard the same facts, and they both perceived things differently. They both thought they were going to be the winner, and as you know, we could only have one winner. So it's a question. How do we know what we perceive is the truth? I didn't tell you I was going to ask you that question, Richard, but what do you think is the truth of what we're perceiving?
Oh, I'm pretty used to you dropping me in on Karen. That's okay. So, there are a number of threads to this. Firstly, there's much that we perceive in our lives as truth, especially when we are growing up and moving through life. And some people never really question what we've been taught as being true, as actually whether it's actually true or not. And in fact, most of what we are taught and accept as being truth as we go through life has nothing at all to do with the truth, but in fact is, I guess you'd call propaganda, information that is taught to us so such that we believe it is true and is reinforced in many different ways, and yet has absolutely nothing to do with the truth. So you might say that is belief. And so we all have beliefs about things that in many cases have nothing to do with what's actually true. So, you know, that's a pretty common phenomenon. In fact, that's ongoing in life, this flow of supposed information to us that has nothing to do with the truth. And when you actually stand back and understand how things work in our lives, for example, the people that define what's taught to us in school, the people that define what is shown to us on television and in movies and on the so-called news, and when we recognize that's actually owned by a particular group in the world, which is a particular segment of Jewish people, and I'm not saying all Jewish people are associated with this because they're not. There are some beautiful Jewish people in the world that I know and count as friends that I consider very dear. And so, you know, I make that very clear distinction as I say these things, because there is a group of Jewish people who essentially control our world, control our media, control our banking and financial systems, control most of the governments of our world. And we don't understand that that's all false. So that bears a lot on the beliefs that we have. And one of the things that happens is, for most people, because, or really, unless they've walked some kind of path where they begin to understand that they are much more than what you might consider this temporal being, the physical being in this temporal domain, that we are a spiritual being on a human journey, until you understand that, you don't actually have a sense of yourself that is beyond your beliefs. And so when you question most people's beliefs, they feel like you're attacking them because they don't have any sense of themselves beyond those beliefs. And notice that nothing I'm talking about here has anything to do with the truth. But when people believe something, they believe it to be true. Those two things are implicit. And we all do that when we form a view, even if it is the truth or even if it isn't. If we believe it to be true, we have a commitment to it. And if you have no sense of yourself beyond those beliefs, then you take those beliefs to be you. And you'll fight tooth and nail to protect those beliefs. Indeed, there are many people die for their beliefs every day. And let me give you an example. You don't have to go into war-torn worlds and so on to understand this. Just look at the people who get cancer and accept chemotherapy and radiation therapy as a solution to their cancer. If they really stood back and looked at the survival rates beyond 7 years after chemo is close to zero, they probably wouldn't choose it. But you see, they've been programmed to believe that the answers to healing, and especially to cancer, but pretty much everything, is inside the Western medical system. Whereas the answers to that are outside of the Western medical system largely, and there are many solutions to healing cancer. So there's a good, I've watched people die for those beliefs. In some cases, I've tried to share with them alternates that I know can take care of it. They don't want to hear about it. They just want to go and do their thing that their doctor recommends, which they're trained to do. None of which I'm speaking to you about has anything to do with the truth. It's all based in belief. And so the reason I'm taking some time with this is because we are given a set of beliefs as we grow up. Sometimes they come from our parents. Mostly they come from the educational system or the media that we are fed, or from those that we associate with who are being influenced in the same manner largely. And so we take it to be true when it's actually not. So if we're looking for truth, we can't find it inside all of that stuff, you might say. And once you start to realize this, it can be a shock to many people. And so how do you find truth? And in my opinion, there are two aspects to finding truth. The first is to take a very committed stance to, in essence, not believing what comes to you from the mainstream media or from the so-called history that's taught to us and all that kind of stuff. But rather make a commitment to yourself to look beyond that for sources of information that on some level you've validated or you believe are valid for your sources of information that's historically accurate. And I do a lot of that. I read very widely on many subjects in an effort to get an understanding about how things actually work rather than how we're told they work. And the two are very different, as I've said. And so much of that I express in my blog. Some of you are aware of my blog, others are not. It's just under my name, richardpresser.com, P-R-E-S-S-E-R.com. And I share my understandings and views pretty openly and pretty controversially in some cases on that blog. So a lot of that's based upon the research that I've done to get an understanding. But ultimately, in my opinion, the place to get a sense of what is true is from your own inner guidance, from that sense of intuitive wisdom, you might say. You could call it gut feel, but it's more a heart feel, in my opinion, when you've refined it a tad. And so that intuitive guidance that we all have, that discernment, if you will, is connected to this. What's true, what's not? Is this for real? Is it nonsense? What is it? And we all have this guidance mechanism if we are willing to train it and to learn to trust it. Not many people do this. There are a lot of people who have developed some skill but don't quite understand this. And so the distinction for me in truth is firstly the willingness to go and do your own research, but ultimately to trust that inner guidance of what is true. So that's a long answer for you, Carolyn. And if I went on a bit long for you, I apologize. But I think that you kind of, when you open that up, you've got to look at it a bit. Is that helpful?
Well, I think it would be helpful for people. I'd like to add something to that.
Great.
I think when you hear truth, it's the way you feel.
That expresses it very well.
What'd you say?
I think that expresses it very well.
Yeah, it's the way you feel. You know, when you hear something that's not true, that's a lie. What was that? I'm hearing some noises. When you hear a lie, someone is telling you something that's not true. If you're connected to your body in any way, your body tells you that it's not true. I don't think we listen to our physical body enough. I think it's one of the reasons that we were given a body. You know, we think of, well, we've got it for locomotion, for picking up things, for taking care of ourselves, and that's all part of it. But I think the body also works like a television antenna. It receives waves of information, and they go inside of us on some level. And our consciousness either validates it or it doesn't. And so to my point of view, it's the way you feel when you hear something. And if you think about it, you know when an acquaintance is not telling you the truth. You can tell it in their voice, in their face, the way they treat you. Maybe even the way they walk or sit. You can evaluate. There's a part of you that evaluates all of that. And maybe what we're talking about here is consciousness. Maybe we're not connected enough to our consciousness. So, I didn't mean to be so long in my answer either, but I thought they were all very important things because we live in a world today, whether it's advertising where or not, people and events are trying to persuade us to accept something and act in a certain manner that might be against us on some level. So I'm glad we're taking the time to talk about this, Richard, because I think it's very important.
I agree. And so I see a very, really what you're talking about and at the heart, dare I say it, of what I was talking about, really the same thing, that inner discernment, that inner sense that is visceral. You feel it in your body.
You do. I was very fortunate that I traveled with a group of people who were spiritually minded. And we went to many places. We saw many different kinds of people who thought differently from me, who acted differently. I learned a lot on those trips. And so I think it's important if you have the opportunity to be able to travel with a group of like-minded people or gather them around you and have discussions. Edgar Cayce did that. I think a lot of people are familiar with Edgar Cayce. He had a group of people that searched for the truth, and they had discussions about it. And we can do that. We can have discussions about our belief system and share it with other people and be open-minded to what they have to say. So I didn't want to spend the whole show tonight on that topic, but I do think it's important, and I'm glad that we have discussed it. So I'd like for those listening to what we're talking about, call in. Give us some of your thoughts about perception, about truth. I think people who are interested in history, Richard, when they read history, they get a lot of this. Because the human race has been through so many ups and downs. People trying to control their minds, their hearts, their bodies. And if you're interested in history and you study it, you learn a lot about this. And I think one of the reasons why this is so important is because it's possible that the world can be going through some turmoil in the near future. Is there anybody out there who has heard about some astrological forecasts where they're discussing some of the things that might happen on Earth in the near future? I know of a few. I'm thinking about the American Indians, the Hopi Indian in particular. How about you, Richard? You know some groups that have studied this?
Astrological indications?
Yeah, or what's going to happen on Earth at the present time?
Well, it depends on the scale you look at. The one that interests me the most is the tracking, if you will, of the precession of the equinoxes that has been undertaken by our ancestors for many, many thousands of years.
Richard, do you think people understand what the precession of the equinox means?
Some people do, but let me explain it. Most people are aware that we are entering what's known as the Age of Aquarius, but people don't understand what that means. And what it means is that when you look due east at the March equinox, anywhere on the planet, just an hour just before dawn, there will be a constellation that comes up above the horizon just before the sun, about an hour before the sun. That phenomenon is called heliacal rising, helios being the sun. And so on that day, it doesn't matter where you are on the planet, because on the equinox, the sun is due east everywhere. And so when you look due east on that March equinox, you will see this constellation rising. Today it's Pisces, and has been for about 2100 years. And somewhere in the next, 10 to 40 years or so, it will become Aquarius. And so that's what it means when you hear, and most people are aware of that song, I think, from the 70s, The Age of
Aquarius. Age of Aquarius?
Yeah, which tells the story very well. And, knowing what I now know, I'm fascinated by the lyrics of that song and what it contained. They were very insightful. But it's pointing to this time. We're in this time of transition into this so-called Age of Aquarius. Now, what it means in terms of human experience is hard to say exactly. But if you know your astrological signs, you will know that looking at the signs normally, Aquarius comes before Pisces, not the other way around. And so what's happening is that these constellations of the astrological signs are tracking backwards through the sky. In other words, they are precessing. Precess means to go backwards. And so hence we have this precession of the equinox, this gradual cycle of the astrological signs that we know backwards through the sky over a period of 25,980 years. So that's the precession of the equinoxes. And that period of nearly 26,000 years is known as the Great Year. So it's a well-understood phenomenon. And what's very interesting is if you examine historical evidence, you find lots of illustrations of the fact that our ancestors were telling us about the precession of the equinoxes. For example, there was a book written in, published in 1969 called Hamlet's Mill by a couple of people whose names I forget, a couple of academics who were experts on myth and legend. In other words, the stories that people were telling their children in the days before written word. And they tracked myth and legend from all over the world. And the overwhelming common thread, and it didn't matter where they looked, was the story of the precession of the equinoxes. And in fact, the reason the book's called Hamlet's Mill is because the Danish myth that was the basis for Shakespeare's Hamlet was one of those stories that told the story of the precession of the equinoxes. And the mill applies because very often the stories contain reference to, for example, giants at the bottom of the sea grinding a salt mill, indicating this grinding action of the precession of the equinoxes on human consciousness. So that's one example. Another example is there are what are called precessional numbers. Now, what I mean by that is it takes 72 years for this precessional cycle to move by 1 degree. And so if you take 72 times 360, you get pretty much 25,980. Don't hold me to it, but I think that's right. And so 72 is a key precessional number, as is its double, 144. Now, you'll be much more familiar with the number 144 in our world. Example, 1440 minutes in a day, to give you one illustration, but there are many. And also 108, which is 1.5 times 72, and so on. So there are a number of what are called precessional numbers. And if you look at many of the ancient monasteries and so on and so forth, you find the numbers 72, 144, 108 all over the place, maybe 108 pillars of a particular type leading up to the building and so on and so forth. They turn up all over the place. And in my opinion, the fact that they occur is pointing us to the importance of this phenomenon in relation to human experience. And there's another example which has turned up in recent years at a fairly recently excavated or begun to be excavated site called Göbekli Tepe in Turkey, which has been excavated for about 40 years now by a German team. Though the guy leading it died about 18 months ago, so I'm not sure what's happening with all that. But one of the things that's been recognized with this site is that it was intentionally buried at least 1,500 years ago. And what that means is, because there's been no contamination of the site, carbon dating works very accurately, at least back to when it was buried. Who knows how old the monuments and so on that it contains actually are. So let's say it's at least 12,000 years old. And this site has large stone pillars and various other things, and they have an astrological layout, as so many of these ancient sites do. And there is one particular pillar there, which has a, I think they call it bas relief. The figures are jutting out of the stone. And if you analyze the imagery on that stone relief, it is showing the exact moment we are in this time, where if you look in the direction of the sun at the time of the December solstice, you will find that the moment we are in is the sun is sitting in what's called the dark rift of the Milky Way galaxy. You may or may not be aware that when you look at the Milky Way galaxy, there is this kind of dark band in the middle of it. And that dark band, actually, particularly in the line where the sun tracks across, is in alignment with galactic center. And so when you look at the time of at the December solstice currently, that's where the sun sits. The sun sits in the dark rift of the Milky Way galaxy at the December solstice currently. And that is exactly the image which is on this pillar, buried at least 11,500 years ago. And if that doesn't make the hair stand up on the back of your neck, I'm not sure what will.
Yes, it is amazing, is it? Richard, you've explained some complicated concepts in a very simple manner. Thank you. That's why I ask you to explain it, because you have a knack for doing that.
Thank you. And there are other things that point to this. You know, we kind of wondered why the long count Mayan calendar ended at the December solstice of 2012. And I'm satisfied there were some energetic things occurred at that time. But the overriding thing, in my opinion, that it was doing was pointing to this moment in time, this period of about 30 to 40 years that we are currently in, where the sun sits in the dark rift of the Milky Way galaxy at the December solstice. Now, why were they all pointing to it? Why were our ancestors telling their children about the precession of the equinoxes? Why was it important? It's not something that we consider important today, but they considered it important, and people living 12,000 years ago, at the very least, maybe could even be 30,000 years, I don't know. All we can say is that Göbekli Tepe site was buried at least 11,500 years ago, according to carbon dating, that those ancient people were telling us about this very moment in time, this period of 30 to 40 years that only occurs every 26,000 years. It's pretty extraordinary if you think about it.
Truly, it is.
And if you analyze the Mayan cosmology in more detail, which, in my opinion, the work of John Major Jenkins on this, you know, going back a decade or so, maybe more, really gets to the heart of this. One of the common motifs in their cosmology was a ball court, and they built these huge, when I say huge, at least the size of a basketball court and maybe somewhat larger. And they built these things out of stone. And they were symbolic. It's not like they played a game in these things. These things were symbolic. And the overriding image in this ball court motif, or the overriding message, was about the ball passing through the goal ring, which Jenkins argues is this time when we are in alignment with galactic center, where the sun is in alignment with galactic center, the ball passing through the ring. And I agree with him. And And so, you know, the whole Mayan cosmology, or a large part of it, was about pointing to this time. And so why is it significant? And so in my view, you know, when you have something that's being pointed at by people over such a long period of time from many different traditions, which happens to be the very time we live in my opinion, it's very significant. And so when you talk about astrological evidence of about this time, to me, this is the most significant element in that conversation. And in my opinion, based upon the work that Carolyn and I have been involved in for many years, I believe we live in a time when the impact of what I would call, what we would call the dark, if you will be eliminated from the human experience. And based upon some experiences that Carolyn and I have had in our work, without going into the detail of it, I'm of the view that the expressions of darkness within all creation are being eliminated in this time. And I think our ancestors knew about this on some level, in some manner. I don't think it was hidden from them the way it's hidden from us. So, you want to speak about truth? I think that's a very powerful truth.
It is a powerful truth. I would like to change the subject, not because it's not worthy, because what we have said certainly is worthy. I want to talk a little bit about vibration, Richard, and how the body picks this up, and how different vibrations makes you feel in your body. Do you want to address that?
Why don't you, Carolyn? I've been doing a lot of talking here.
Got a sore throat, huh?
I think they've heard enough from me for a while.
No, this is the last time you'll be here for perhaps a very long time. I think people are glad to hear you. Although, I would like people to call in and comment on some of these things and tell us about their truth or what they think is false today. I mentioned this before, a little earlier, about how our body is like a radio station tower. And it sends out messages. These messages also help bring things into our lives that we want to have brought into our lives. Ambitions. We can have an idea, and we want that idea clothed in reality, and our body can send that thought out, have that thought clothed in reality, and bring it back to us. Our higher self is involved in this. And I think it would help very much if we meditated. I know you meditate every day, and it's very important. And I'm not talking about guided imagery where you listen to a tape and someone guides you through all of this. I'm talking about actually guiding yourself. Guiding yourself. I remember the first time I wanted to know what it was like in the center of the cosmos. And I decided to send a piece of my consciousness into the center of the cosmos. And I have to tell you, it seemed like it took forever to get there. And when I got there, I was afraid I would not be able to come back.
Yes, I remember.
But I came back. That was the first time. But now, I can send my consciousness wherever I want to send it. How's that for bringing back truth?
Pretty powerful.
And what I want to say to all of you that you can do this too. And I didn't mention this to you before, Richard, but if there are people out there who want to train themselves to do this, I think it would be possible for the two of us to talk with them privately on their own telephone line and teach them how to do that. What do you think?
Sure. To teach them how to travel.
Send your consciousness throughout the cosmos.
Sure. Yeah, I think you can teach people very well how to do that.
So if people wanted to do this, Richard, how would they contact us so that we could set this up for them?
I recommend that they just send me an email. That would be the simplest thing. Send it to richard@richardpresser.com and put in the heading, the subject of learning to have their consciousness travel the cosmos.
Or they could send it to me too.
That's true.
What would be my address, Richard? So
well,
they could...
Carolyn, the best option would be to send it to me because I would need to organize, set up payment systems and stuff like that. So probably better to do that, but they can copy you. Carolyn's email address is carolyn.evers@carolynevers.com.
Simple enough. You know my name and it's there.
Indeed.
I would like for us to take a moment, all of you who are listening to my voice, and decide where you want to be next month or next year even on your journey. What do you wish to accomplish? I would like for you to focus on that now. I told you your brain is like a radio tower and it can attract these things. So what do you wish to attract to yourself? Perfect health? Finances? Love? I like the idea of attracting love. Sounds like a good idea. What do you think, Richard?
Always.
And there's all kinds of love. There's romantic love, but there's loving in a friendship way. Love takes many forms. And perhaps one form is to practice it. Love what you see, color, the sky, the grass. There's so much around you that you can love and treasure. And if you can't get out into the countryside to see things to love and treasure, you can love and treasure some good memories. Relive some memories that was real fun in your life. We all have some good memories somewhere. Well, we're not getting telephone calls, so I think people must want to hear us talk, Richard. What do you think?
Well, they don't have another option. If they don't call in, they...
Okay, we have someone who did call. Helen, what can we do for you, dear? Helen, can you hear me? Did Helen drop off the line, or is she there?
She did. She dropped off the line.
Oh, Helen, why did you drop off the line?
Oh, well, let's move on.
Of course we'll move on.
She'll be back if she wishes.
So do you have something that you wish to talk about, Richard?
I feel I'm all talked out, Carolyn. So vibration is a very interesting subject. You know, it means different things to different people. And it's very interesting. Carolyn and I had a guy drive up to see us during this last week. A man who works as an energy healer, and he came because he said basically that he had used muscle Helen response testing, and
thank you.
Well, let's take Helen's call, and I'll
yeah, let's do that. Helen, what can we do for you, dear?
Hey, Carolyn and Richard, so nice to hear you. Your voices, and to know, reach respect that you asked for a little bit.
Thank you, Helen. Good to hear from you.
What can we do for you, darling?
I just plugged in and heard you about the meditation and self-guiding. Really, exactly what I need to hear. But today, I'm calling in, I'm curious. I did quite some past life session with you, and like we said, I chose a lot of Asian life in the past. I'm curious, is there any Western life in the past that you can guide me through?
Helen, you have always been one who has been involved with wisdom. Whether it was in the Western world or in the Asian world, you have wisdom in the very depth of you. I don't know if you're able to do it, but I would like to encourage you to order a past life session. Mm-hmm. What we do, you see, I can tell you about this, but when you order a past life session...
I think Helen's familiar with them, Carolyn. She's had at least one, maybe more than one. Would that be right?
Yeah, I did, exactly. I'd like to support you, too, in all the means I can. Just recently, in the past couple of years, it has been difficult. And certainly, next year's goal is to be financially abundant. So,
yes. Not so easy for her now, Carolyn.
Yeah, that's the case with a lot of people today. It's not easy.
Feel the pain. But what you said is
excuse me,
so can you give her a little lead, Carolyn?
There's something I want to ask her. Tell me how it feels when I say to you, or I ask you, have you ever taken a vow of poverty in the past?
Please say that again.
How does it make you feel when I ask this question of you? Mm. Have you ever taken a vow of poverty in the past?
You mean this lifetime or before?
Any time at all. This should resonate with you. Have you taken...
It does. Does it resonate? Oh, my gosh. I was like... Why do I have this hardship? And I think it's kind of voluntary to taste the real taste of the real life. It's hard.
Yeah, I feel that you've taken a vow of poverty.
Oh my gosh. It's so hard.
That's why I asked you, how does it make you feel when I ask you that?
I feel because it's very light.
What I would like to do is to release you from that vow of poverty. Richard, have some way that you could release her from that vow of poverty?
Yes. So, Helen, I ask that you say the following after me. I command and intend.
I command and intend.
That any and all.
That any and all.
Vows of poverty.
Vows of poverty.
Or similar.
Or similar.
That I have made.
That I have made.
In this life or any other.
In this life or any other.
Now be declared null and void.
Now be declared null and void.
And be completely cleared.
And be completely cleared.
And so it is.
Now tell me, Helen, how do you feel when you say that?
It made me cry.
It's like the shackles fell off, wasn't it?
Yes, it's on my shoulders, so heavy. The weight, feeling the world, weight of the world.
You see, I think many people in some life or another have taken that vow. They've been religious of some sort, you know, a nun, a priest. They've taken the vows of poverty.
Oh my gosh.
So, and the soul remembers these things.
So,
and so, I want all of those people who are listening, who resonate to this, ask yourself, have you taken a vow of poverty? And if you feel that you had, I want you to go through this. Intend that any and all vows of poverty drift away from you into the ethers as if they did not exist. And so allow prosperity come and take its place. So open up your heart, Helen, and all the others, and allow this concept of prosperity on all levels come into your body. You see, prosperity isn't just money.
Right.
It could be friends. It could be joyous events. It could be laughter. Let's concentrate on those two words, or three words, really. Laughter, love, and joy.
And the joy. Yes.
Absolutely. Laughter, love, and joy.
Wow.
And so, Helen, do you think that has helped you in some way?
Absolutely. And wow, this is absolutely a surprise. And I think you two can take it to everybody on a much larger scale. And many people probably need that. Probably we can add to your radio show, make people be aware, because we don't know. We kind of wonder, we kind of know, but we don't know. I heard this before. But everybody, I think many people know, but have no clue it can be resolved in this way.
Well, I'm glad you're feeling better, Helen.
Yes.
Let me know after you have done all of this if you see prosperity coming your way or feel that it is coming your way. Let me know in the future.
Absolutely. So is there anything further I can do, or I just accept the open?
Well, I think it's important not to work on too many things at one time. Mm-hmm. What you're working on here is a very large thing in your life. What you're working with is very large in your life to get rid of any vows of poverty and mm-hmm. open up to prosperity. Matter of fact, I suggest that you remind yourself of that each day, that you were giving up any vows of poverty and you were open to any prosperity that will come your way. And ask your higher self to bring this prosperity into your life. Ask every day.
I will certainly do. Wow. What a gift.
It is a gift, isn't it? But it's really not a gift that we're giving you. It is a gift that the universe gives you.
But it's the universe Richard, we wants don't to know. Give
The universe wants to give each of us gifts of prosperity on so many different kinds of levels. And so if you're meditating, meditate for friends to come into your life that are on the same wavelength, that think like you, so you can comfortably have discussions with them. And all of you benefit.
That will be lovely.
You know, it would even be interesting, if you're so inclined, is to invite some friends occasionally into the house, into the home, just so you can discuss some of these topics. We need to reinforce each other's joy.
Yes.
I think it's important today because there's so much negativity out in the world. And that's a beautiful thought, isn't it? Reinforce each other's joy.
Yes. Absolutely. In a depressing world.
Wow. Absolutely.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you so much
for calling, Dawn.
Oh, thank you. I was just going to say hi to both of you and hear both the voice. Thank God, really a gift. Kind of to others is kind of to yourself. This is so true. So wonderful. Thank you, Carolyn and Beatrice, again. And
you're wonderful, Darlene.
Yeah, probably we can do this kind of thing to the chair on the group, the conference calls monthly, add this element. Probably some know and don't know how to do so. But I will certainly do daily. And
you're welcome, darling.
Thank you very much again. And we'll keep in touch.
Yes, babe. Richard, Helen brought up something that maybe you could expound upon. And that is that people could join our phone calls.
Yes.
Got about two minutes.
Real quick, Richard, we have 2 minutes.
So, we run, Carol and I run monthly conference calls with people that are interested in that work, calls that are with some of the masters, with Lord Metatron, with Archangel Michael, and a third call called the Voices from Heaven call, which is usually done with Yeshua these days. Though there have been many others in the past that have come forth on those calls. And so we receive a message from the person who is, or the individual that has come forth for that call, and that's followed by a meditation, which Carolyn usually does, and then Q&A session, which goes anywhere that people want it to go. So they're interesting sessions, and each of those are monthly. And if you're interested in those, I suggest, again, you send me an email, and we can look at how you might join them.
Thank you, Richard. And before we go, I would like to suggest, if you're willing, to go to my website at carolynevers.com and order a past life reading on the left-hand side. We don't tell you about the past life. We literally take you there, and you put your foot into it and experience it yourself. It's quite remarkable. Richard, thank you for being with us today. We've enjoyed your company, your wisdom, and the way that you explain complicated topics very simply.
Thank you, Carolyn, and thank you for your wonderful contribution.
Okay, goodbye for now. Until the next time, we will see you then.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, everyone.